Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we talk about the YTX motherboard form factor and how this design expands on the versatility of everything ATX. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McCain.
Yes, we've been talking a lot lately about how the hardware, especially the enthusiast hardware market, is kind of stagnant. We're moving forward, but it's kind of incremental. I mean, there's like new chipsets and they go 300 series, 400, 500, et cetera. Right?
Yeah.
And, you know, every time you get a new motherboard, you need to get a new processor, at least on the Intel side. And, you know, the last time we had something interesting to talk about with motherboards that wasn't just an incremental change was those silly sockets on the back, right?
Oh, right. You're talking about the reverse connectors, I think.
The reverse connectors. So, you know, let's talk about the big guys, right? How do we innovate? Well, Gigabyte brought out Project Stealth.
Yeah, Project Stealth.
That kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah.
The cables are stealthy on the back.
Uh-huh.
MSI, not to be outdone, their version, Project Zero.
And I want to say that MSI was probably first.
Oh.
Which I want to say, out of all the names, they have the best one.
Project Zero, cool. And Zero cables visible. That's where I'm going.
Yep, it's awesome.
And then Asus, of course, a lot of people feel like they're the big dog. Mm-hmm. Their version has a very memorable name, BTF.
BTF. I have no idea what BTF stands for. Maybe it's like before the flood or before is backwards.
Back to front.
Yeah. What's kind of nice about the Asus implementation is that they went all in.
Oh, yeah.
So they had graphics cards, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, you have cable, a big ass cable that goes and plugs into that so that you can run the graphics card.
Right.
Well, they have special BTF editions of the 4090 that had this little tail at the very end of the PCI Express connector that delivered power to power the card.
Man, I really want BTF to be something interesting, but I just have got nothing.
I don't have anything either. But that card is awesome. And then, of course, at Computex this year, they were advertising how they are now making a universal version of that graphics card. So they don't have these cards that are out of stock and then a whole bunch of them that are in stock that nobody wants to buy because they didn't buy into the BTF stuff.
Well, could they get you like an adapter, right? Like the ones they have right now that move the plugs from the top to the side and the back and the front and the back to front.
Maybe that's it. Well, what Asus did is they created a little extension. So you would plug the extension in if you had a BTF motherboard. If you did not have a BTF motherboard, you would use the power cables on the PCB for power the graphics card. Don't use that extension, and then you can still install the card and use it.
I like it.
It makes it awesome.
I am an Asus fan, although they tend to be a little bit on the higher end.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really what got me excited this week, because it's hard to get excited about BTF. Sorry, Asus.
yeah.
But I read an article about a company that I'm a little bit unfamiliar with. Maxon is the company, has put out a new tiny form factor motherboard. They're calling the form factor YTX, which it's, I feel like should also have a really interesting acronym to it.
Yeah. Well, we have...
Yes to Extreme.
Oh.
Maybe.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what the ATX stands for, because... you know, this all spawns from the ATX form factor.
Average TX form factor?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Advanced. Oh, maybe it's advanced.
I feel like we should know this. There's probably a wiki, but it's more fun to guess.
Well, and we'll put it down in the show notes if I happen to find it when I think about it. But we have, you know, form factors have changed a lot. And the whole reason that they exist is so that there's standardization within the PC market.
Well, yeah, because you want your components to be compatible.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard enough to come up with compatible hardware for a build as it is without having to try to come up with all the different types. And I mean, we already have to deal with the differences between, you know, some of the chipsets, especially on the Intel side. Making sure that you've got the right processor for your chipset was a great example of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and we had, you know, AMD kind of does it, but it's generally like ages of generations.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that people like AMD, because your chipset might last for two or three or four generations. And I think the current chipset, they're expecting to last for at least two more generations of Ryzen. We'll see.
Oh, yeah. The AM5 is pretty awesome, actually. So what we have here is on PC World, and I can link this down in the show notes, we have the tiny new YTX motherboard format trims the fat and adds M.2 slots.
Okay. Well, now adding M.2 slots is something we've seen before. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think the podcast machine has an extra slot on the back, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yes. We are using a board that I reviewed a long time ago, the Asus ROG Strix B660i, which is an amazing board. It's amazingly small, and it uses the 12th and 13th generation processors.
Nice.
And it's mini ITX. It's very, very small. So you have basically enough room for a single expansion card. You also have slots for two M.2 drives, one on the front that has a heatsink, and then one on the back between the motherboard tray and the motherboard.
So just the standoffs to really keep it there. Mm-hmm. So if you want to put a really fancy one there, it's an opportunity for some gutting.
Yeah.
Build some louvered venting, perhaps, or cut a slot for your heatsink.
Well, you know, that brings up an interesting point, right? Because BTF, Project Zero, Project Stealth, these are all behind the board connectors. Everybody puts those connectors in a slightly different spot. So now it's pushing all of this innovation down to the case manufacturer to provide a compatible case design so that you okay. can install these motherboards, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, well, you got the, but the, I don't even know how to say this. The screws are always in the same place, but you have options, right? Because you can move the screws, or maybe they're not always in the same place.
Well, the screws are always in the same place, but the components that they place on the board, they can move around. So when we have a quote-unquote form factor, there are certain standards that need to be followed. The obvious one is the location of the screws.
Right.
The next one is the location of the I.O. So the ATX form factor requires that the I.O., which is what you plug your keyboard, USB, and
input, output, right?
Yeah.
All right, I'm with you.
Input, output. I.O. That always has to be in the same location, and it follows a certain size. So everything that will fit within that area is what you get access to. Early boards, you know, they had, what was it, a parallel port, two serial ports, and a keyboard and a mouse. That was it. And right. then later on, they added, oh, we can add audio down to the bottom. So now we'd have 7-channel audio. And since audio has kind of gone the way of the dodo bird, now we're having just a couple of USB plugs. Now we have 12 USB plugs.
All the different speeds and sizes.
Yeah. But the idea is that the area there is not standard. The size of the area is a standard.
Right, because you've got to fit that panel there. And mm-hmm. I guess you could go smaller, right, as long as your I.O. plate still fits that form factor.
Yeah, and remind me a little later because I have some samples here.
Ooh, samples.
And I will show you how form factor actually has spanned an entire generation.
Okay, that sounds fun.
Yeah. Now, the other part that is standardized with the ATX form factor is the location of the expansion slots.
Right, okay.
So if we have expansion slots just nearly all over the place, then the case manufacturers don't have anywhere to go and say, well, this is where a card slot's going to be. So we have to have some standardization there. So expansion slots, holes, and the location of the ATX I.O.,
right.
Those are all standards that are kind of well-defined within the spec.
Unless you put those silly things on the back, right?
Right. And that is where it kind of breaks with convention. It doesn't break with the form factor. So you can place those components, those power components, anywhere you want. So we have an example of like EVGA. They rotated, you know, we'll see this in a moment, but they rotated the area where the CPU is to put the memory at the top. Well, that also repositioned where the power connects. Right. Well, there's no standard on where that power has to go. But if you start taking that design and then flipping it around and saying now it's a behind the board connector thing, and then you push it onto the case manufacturers, eventually they'll have like this little skeleton of all the screws that are required and everything else has been removed.
I don't think that's a bad idea. I mean, why does the motherboard tray have to be solid? Why can't it be some sort of configurable skeleton?
Strength, mostly.
Okay.
You know, because we want to have, you know, we've pushed in graphics cards before and we've seen the board just kind of bend as it's sliding in.
Oh, gosh, the flex.
And I've had, well, this was, I bring this up because it's scarred me for life. Oh, my God. But one of my first computer builds when I was just in college, right?
Right.
I spent several weeks putting together all the components to put this computer together. And I went to, I think it was CompUSA, because I wanted a sound card. So finally had some bucks. I was going to buy a sound card. So I went and bought a sound card. I bring it home. My good friend from high school was there. He was kind of watching me install the card. And I like slotted it in. And then I hear this.
No.
And it basically broke the motherboard. Nothing worked after that.
Wow.
It really was on me because it wasn't supported very well in the case. Partially because it's a baby AT form factor. And that has its own little nuances. But it was also an old PCB. And once they flex, sometimes they will crack. And then they, at the point, they don't work no more.
Well, I guess good excuse to upgrade. But yeah, that's a painful lesson, my friend.
So we've talked about M.2 slots.
Right.
We've meandered a bit. But so we're back to the tiny YTX. So what makes this special, right?
It's got a Y instead of a IETX or a baby ATX.
Yeah, so this article starts out talking about the different form factors. We have ATX, micro ATX, and mini ITX. Mini ITX was invented by VIA, of all companies, because they were making small form factor computers and small form factor chipsets. They created the mini ITX form factor. Now, mini ITX, much like ATX and whatever, it's defined by the mounting holes. And if we look on this picture, we have a hole up here at the upper left where the I/O starts.
Right.
And then we have a hole on the other side of the memory slots. And if we look at this picture of this ITX or YTX motherboard, we have another set of holes off to the right.
So it's the same length as a traditional ATX with the three screws long.
Yep. But then it's only mini ITX high because we have one screw at the very bottom, which corresponds to the first set of screws on the middle of the board.
Yeah, which would be the middle set of screws. Those three that are along the bottom edge would be the middle set on most other motherboards.
Right. So what they've done here is basically took a mini ITX form factor and then just extended it.
Right.
Okay. So that extension is where you have more M.2 slots. So we have two more over here. We have, they move the 24-pin power to the far right, and it's on the back. And they also have the SATA ports. Looks like they're at the bottom.
Yeah, I see that.
And then they had this little block here. I'm not sure what that block does. But the idea is that we have, within the mini ITX form factor, with most chipsets, there is an excess amount of PCI Express lanes that are available that just cannot be used because it physically cannot put those devices on the boards. And with this, you can't.
Now, it is kind of interesting combination, and this board, by the way, is the MS Terminator H770, which is, at least it's got a cool name also, because we've got a combination of the plugs on the back, like the Project Zero, and we've got the drive on the back, which is becoming increasingly common. The rest of the board is almost like two-thirds or maybe closer to half of a traditional motherboard.
Right, and we have it was, they call it the flexible PCI Express 16X slot. That's the primary slot here. And it can be basically bifurcated. So you can split it up into different uses, which is kind of neat. Total of, I think, four M.2 slots. If we go and look at the specifications here. Storage, yeah. It supports a total of four M.2s, four SATAs at 6 GB. Interfaces for one SFF. And then what else they have is basically everything that would normally be on a 700 series Intel board, including two Ethernets. We have Realtek audio and a plethora of USB 2.0 slots.
Yeah, it's a good looking motherboard. I suspect much like the Project Stealths, it's going to require a specific type of case to run it because of the way the plugs are set up.
Right. And that is something that, you know, I'm not too familiar with how case designs have been following this movement. But by the looks of it, By having the 24-pin power connector on the far right of the PCB, that aligns with where a lot of traditional motherboards might have that slot already open.
Oh, right. Yeah. Or the cases that are designed for the BTF, for example, would have the slots in a similar position, so it would be compatible.
Yeah, and that's the idea here. And on top of that, it should fit in a standard case. But really what gets me concerned is why? I mean, obviously we want to have more storage, and we have a total of four M.2 slots on here, and people like that, especially in Asia, where storage seems to be a, we're going to buy the smallest drive we can because it's cheap and we'll just buy a bunch of them instead of getting one big drive and then splitting it up or something. It seems to be like an Asian thing where they love to stack things with drives. Like, for instance, the Cooler Master Stacker, you remember that case?
Yes,
that was
yes.
All front.
All drives.
All drives. And it never sold well in the United States because nobody needed that. It just happened to be the only case around. So a lot of people bought into it, and a lot of manufacturers copied that design. But it was primarily intended for the Asia Pacific market. Kind of weird, huh?
Well, I'm intrigued. The Y or the YTX. Maxon, if you're out there, you'll have to hook us up so we can give this thing a shot. But I suspect it's going to be a really fun option to the baby ITX case builds that we have become so fond of.
Oh, not the baby, the mini.
The mini.
Mini. And so we have a couple of boards here. I just thought maybe for the rest of the show, we can go through some of the different iterations of ITX and how different manufacturers have extended or shrunk them to either maintain a certain size or a certain cost. Or
gotcha. Well, an excuse something. To go back to the vault. I know that this is just a sample size.
Yeah. So okay. So the first board I have here, and
oh, it's little.
It's little.
Oh, and old. Ooh.
Okay. So this here, this is an ASUS BX440 slot one motherboard. Ooh. That is in the baby AT form factor.
So this is quite an old board, P28B, huh?
Mm-hmm. This will be featured in a video on YouTube once I get around to doing that again. But what I wanted to point out here is that we have a series of mounting holes on this board.
Yes, we do. Okay, but we only are using, well, three across the back, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And two in the middle. Is that really right? It is right.
Yep.
Because the other one would be where the slot is.
Mm-hmm. So the difference between the baby AT and the AT form factor is that they didn't use all the holes. And when you mounted these boards in those cases, there was usually only one spot that had a mechanical screw where you would actually secure it down. Everything else was these nylon standoffs that slotted into the motherboard tray.
And you just snapped them down.
Yeah, you'd put those in there, and then you would slide it in place, and then you'd use the one screw to prevent it from moving around. And then once you added your expansion cards, that's what locked the board into the case so it didn't move.
This has got to be like the world's most simple I/O port.
Oh, yeah. Well, it has just a single keyboard DIN. Now, what's interesting, and this is the part that I wanted to bring up. So these holes, right? This one at the bottom, it's kind of like a double oval. And the one here that's above it, that's got this little brass on it.
Right.
The ones that are brass, those are where you're supposed to use screws.
Oh, because it would ground them back in the day, right?
Right. Those holes are in the same format as the standard ATX of today. So I could take this motherboard and put it into a modern PC chassis and be able to use those holes to secure the board. And on top of that, this keyboard DIN would fit in the lower section of the ATX I/O on the back of the case.
So even this crazy old motherboard is compatible with the modern screw standoffs.
Yeah, which is kind of fun.
All right.
And that's where, you know, the power or the longevity of the ATX form factor really comes in.
All right.
Oh, and I guess the expansion slot layout was established during this era.
Now, we've talked about this a bit, and I know you had a calculator even for a while, but the size of the case also determines how many slots it's going to have based on the largest motherboard that they expect that case will take.
Yeah. Yeah. And the standard in ATX is 7. And on the Baby AT, I think it's 7.
Is it 7?
Let me look.
We're looking.
All right. So on this board, we have a slot for the ATX.
Right.
1, 2, 3, 4 with 3 PCIs. And then we have a shared ISA. And then we have one more ISA.
So 6.
So 6. But the for all of the Baby ATs, there was this big area at the top. So they always would push them down. So there's actually room for another slot. And when you put this into a standard case, the topmost slot, which is number 7 or number 1, is open.
Oh.
And that's also in this particular case where the, you know, the floppy drive and stuff connect.
All right. So that's an oldie but a goodie. A little guy, though.
Yeah. Right. Now, in a board that I reviewed a long time ago is the Asus P8Z68. Now, this is going to be your standard run-of-the-mill basic ATX motherboard.
All right, so I'm pulling this out. It's a beautiful blue, though.
Oh, yeah. That was back when they did blue, which was pretty awesome.
All right, so this is using the Z68 chipset?
Yep.
So, well, yeah, this is quite a bit different in comparison, but this is a lot more like what I'm used to.
Mm-hmm. So well, this is your standard ATX.
So standard ATX, looking at the screws, so we are 3 across to the middle and 3 across to the bottom of the standard spacing.
Mm-hmm.
And if I looked at this and cut the bottom of the board off just below those middle sections, that would be that YTX. I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I want to say I picked this board because I thought it was cut off. It didn't have this third screw at the top. Certain ATX motherboards, because it doesn't have to be a certain width. That's not necessarily defined. It's more or less the placement of the holes and the everything else. That's what defines ATX. So some manufacturers, they minimize the cost by putting less stuff.
Right.
And they'll shrink the board down. So instead of using 3 screws across the top, they use 2, and then the board will stop about halfway to that third screw.
So you've got like an overhang of about 1 inch. I remember those things.
Yeah, and they would like flop around. You wouldn't be able to install memory. It was kind of bad and inconvenient, but it helped motherboard manufacturers increase their profit margins by minimizing the design if they didn't need to put that extra stuff on there.
And of course, this is a much more modern board, so we've got a huge I/O port section on the back.
Yeah. Do you want to look at the EVGA Z790 Dark, or do we want to look at something really more toward the Z68 generation?
Oh, I don't know. They both sound good to me.
All right. Well, then I'll open up the box.
Okay.
Here. The imagination balls again.
So Dennis has chosen the fancy package from MSI.
So this board, I don't know if you can hear me or not, but this board is one that I bought when I was competing in the MSI MOA overclocking competition.
So yeah, I'll repeat that because it's a little, so this was Dennis's competition board from the MSI overclocking competition. Which one was it?
I don't remember what year it was.
Anyway, so this was a specific motherboard that was chosen to be compatible with MSI's competition that year. So the Big Bang was, we thought, the most competitive board in that class. And this is interesting because this is from the era that I built a machine from where MSI had really embraced the military theme.
Oh, yeah.
I had a Sniper Elite motherboard with Sniper memory on it, if I'm not mistaken, for a while.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing, there's a lot of cool things with this board. It's got shells for the MCP heatsink at the bottom.
Yeah, they look like real copper even.
It has a Gatling gun for the topmost VRM cooler.
Military Class 3. I love it.
And this is the X78 motherboard. So it takes the, the LGA 2011 CPU, 4-channel memory. And it turns out that while this offered the most power, it was also not the most efficient when it came to certain overclocks, which is why I didn't necessarily win the competition, but I gave the other competitors a run for their money.
There you go.
Now, so the reason I brought this out is because this is a true ATX XL motherboard.
So I'm assuming the XL is the length, because as I'm looking at this, using, again, the screws,
mm-hmm.
over three across the top, plus about a half, well, almost an inch maybe.
Yeah, there's some extra on there. It's a big board.
And then from top to bottom, we go the one, the middle, the bottom set that would define the standard ATX. Mm-hmm. And then we got about 2 more inches and then another set of screws down at the bottom.
Yeah. Now, if you count how many expansion card slots it has.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Right.
Now that, the count.
Yeah. So it still has the 7, but there is actually a slot that, because they moved all these down.
Oh, so there's space above what? Well, I guess we could call that slot one, the top slot.
Mm-hmm. Which was taken up by the heat sinks, basically.
Fantastic.
So this is really an 8-slot motherboard. And the reason for that is that you can install up to 4 dual-slot graphics cards and run 4-way SLI on this board.
Oh, those were the days.
With the way that it's configured.
That's a beautiful board. That's interesting that they went this route before we had those huge I/O covers that have become so popular now.
Oh, right. Well, I don't know. Maybe that one does have the cover. Back in this era, some manufacturers were giving you like these aluminum shrouds that you would screw down when you install it in. But since this board was really more of a high end, and it required a special case because it's too tall, right? You can't just put it in a standard case. So a lot of people that bought them used them for overclocking, like what I did. And so at that point, it was just out on an open bench.
Now, if you were out on the open market, this is one of those more unicorn boards, right? A limited edition board.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was limited edition when I bought it, and it just happened to be the only one that I could get. And I picked it up because it came as a bundle. So I had the graphics card that I needed to buy for the competition, plus the motherboard, and I could just use them together.
Excellent.
It's pretty awesome. And yeah, this will be one of them that goes into the permanent collection, partially because I have some history with it. And the other part is because it's rare. It was rare when I got it.
Well, it is a bit refreshing. I mean, this was in the era when everything had the anime girls on it and stuff. So it was fun to see MSI go in the military direction. Everything was military strength and military spec and military themed.
Well, and Gigabyte was doing the same thing at that time. Had the G1 boards.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Gigabyte also following suit. That's a great looking board and very fancy packaging. I can see why you were interested in it from the get-go.
Totally double stacked and everything.
All right, so we got one more on the board. Ooh, this one is amazing to me because the packaging is so plain, but then I see Kingpin.
EVGA like to double and triple box their...
So EVGA's Kingpin Edition, also a fancy motherboard. These are not easy to get either.
Well, and you can't get them anymore.
That's right. No more EVGAs, no more Kingpins, at least in the near future. We'll see if they return to form. So we're pulling this one out. Lots of packaging. And this is... yeah, there you go.
ASMR.
Popcorn baby.
All right.
So this is it's a very heavy motherboard, and this is much more like I expect from the modern. So this is the EVGA Z790 Dark Kingpin Edition.
Yeah. Now, what's different about this one is that it's an extended ATX, which means that it's wider.
So again, if we were to use those beautiful screws, mm-hmm. we're 3 across plus a little extra, about an inch.
Yep. And we have the standard height.
Standard height. So 3 in the middle, 3 at the bottom. And actually, that's only sort of true because one of them is, well, it's there, but it's hard to get to.
Oh, yeah. Well, some of them are hidden. You have to remove the covers to get to them and everything.
Sneaky. So this is a really great example of a more modern form factor where almost all of the components are covered.
Right. Lots of heat sinks, huge VRM coolers because designed for overclocking. The thing that's special about this is that EVGA rotated the area around the CPU socket.
Oh, I see that. So the memory is going across the top of the motherboard instead of being horizontal.
Mm-hmm. In a sense, they took that area and then just rotated it 90 degrees to the left. Everything else is virtually the same. So the memory goes across the top at that point, and then you have the two VRM sections. So you have one down the I/O side and then one across the bottom where the video cards are. All of the power is still on the left at 90 degrees.
Oh, yeah, it is. So is there an advantage to overclocking with that rotation that they were trying to achieve?
I don't think so.
Or just something different?
I think it was just something different, and it gave them opportunities to move things that would normally not be able to be moved. So, for instance, the CPU power, we have two 8-pin CPU connectors on the left, which is right next to the 24-pin power. Now, if this was in the standard location...
I love, because it doesn't have to run around behind the board.
Nope. And if this was in the standard rotation, those 8 pins would be at the very top of the board. So then you have two areas where you have to connect power to get it to work.
Oh, man, EVGA, you guys got it right. You should have stuck to your guns.
And then everything else is basically the same. So we have a huge area in the middle, which is on modern motherboards for M.2 drives. Big VRM cooler, we already talked about that. And then there is a lot of things on here that are catered mostly to overclockers. So we have a USB on there for backing up BIOSes. We have a plethora of fan connectors. We have voltage test points. We have onboard debug LEDs plus power and reset. All of the cool stuff.
Yeah, I would imagine that a lot of these never even made it into cases because they were used for powerhouse overclocking on benches, right?
Well, we have the EVGA fans that bought EVGA because it was EVGA, and I'm sure they built massive systems using this kind of stuff. But at almost $1,000 for this motherboard, I didn't see too many people buying them just to put them in a case.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, rare and expensive. What a beautiful board, though.
Yeah.
And this doesn't even have to fall back on OLEDs.
No. Well, there's no lights on there at all.
No lights on there at all. Only the things that you need to go fast.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS or subscribe to us on YouTube. This has been an Engineering Production, copyright 2025. Thanks for listening.